It's time for another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Oh, hi. Oh, yes. All right. Well, we have a really wonderful, crazy, fun, deep episode ahead of us today. I'm very excited to share this with you. I want to just start, because I'm inspired. One of my guests and one of my very dearest friends, Colleen Smith, is on the show today, and I wanted to just start with a sort of being inspired by some really sad tragedy, horrible stuff that happened this week. She lost her dog. And her dog, Blue, was just a friend to all of us. And she's not really going to want to talk about it too much, and I totally understand. But I haven't really talked a lot about pets on the show, and I wanted to share some stories or a story. I mean, I've grown up with pets all my life. I don't have any now, and I've never had any since I've lived in L.A., mainly because I haven't been allowed to by crazy landlords and such. But the last place I've been for the last 2 years, I am allowed to have them. And I just always feel like I'm too busy and I'm just terrified of like screwing up the life of some animal. But the reality is I love them. I love dogs and cats. I don't care about any other animals. I don't care about rabbits. I have pigs, like people that have potbelly pigs, disgusting across the board. And not because they're pigs, but because like they just want to eat and just chew shit up and they don't care about you. They have no, interest in, a connection with you. Birds should be outside flying high up in the sky, not kept in a cage. No. Fish, I'm sorry. Snakes. Oh, you're weird. Whatever. But dogs and cats, I love, and I rarely meet a dog or a cat that I don't, fall in love with. I love going to parties and playing with their animal more than talking to people because I really do enjoy both of them. And I've grown up with, dogs and cats all of my life. And our Boston Terrier growing up from like, I think I was in sixth grade through when I lived out here. We had a Boston Terrier who only had three legs and his name was Dorchester. And he was just the greatest dog in the world. But I also, I want to really talk about this cat that I had named Dink. And my cat Dink, who I got when I was maybe five. Dink, it was hilarious because I named her when I was five, and it was based on these books called Dory the Witch, and Dory the Witch had a cat named Gink with a G, but for some crazy screwed up Droege thing, we always fuck up every name. Somehow I came up with Dink, like I don't know how or why, but that was the name, which was a hilarious name for this cat because she was the most arrogant, regal bitch, and I loved this cat, but she walked around like, hey, I'm Dink, like a fucking queen. And she really hated everyone but me. And she just had just contempt and disdain as just any, just a gorgeous black and white tabby with a little bit of gold flex in her. And she, and she just really needed no one in the world. But really, she and I got each other. We really liked each other. I was also a very gentle child and I loved animals and I loved, and she eventually had babies and she had a big orange tabby that we named Garfield because we were very creative back then. And then a runt named Pepper who lived to be like 28 or something. She just got older and stinkier and weirder and more feral and just like whenever that was and whatever. But Dink was the greatest. And there was a moment when I was in third grade and it was summertime and we were running around and, being North Carolina, grass trash. And my mom needed to go somewhere we needed to run an errand. We needed to go to Kmart for something because as you do, emergency, got to get to Kmart. So we got in the car and Kmart was probably 2 miles away from where we lived. And we drove all the way to Kmart. We got in the parking lot and we hit this bump And my, it was almost like we hit a speed bump. And I was like, my mom was like, where did that come from? And then she drove forward and then she looked in her rearview mirror and she saw this furry creature that was just like tail swinging. And it was this animal behind the car. And my mom was like, what was that? And then she looked and she said, that's Dink. And somehow Dink had climbed in the well of the tire of my mom's car. I believe it was an Astro van at the time. So it was, you know, big tire well. Dink had climbed up in there. We drove for 2 miles and this cat balanced herself in the tire well the entire time. Finally, we get to the parking lot. I mean, she's minutes away from being okay, but I probably, my mom like slammed on the brakes or something. Dink lost her footing and fell out and we ran over her head. Now, there's a happy ending, I promise. Happy-ish ending. She was weirdly fine. She was in the vet for like 3 days. I remember I was allowed to like get out of school so that I could go and visit Dink in the hospital. And she recovered. She completely lost her voice. She was mute after that. And so she would open her mouth and kind of make noise. And she had lost a lot of teeth. But she was fine, ultimately. She was still a bitch. She still had no fucks left to give. She lived a nice, long life until many years later when she had gotten up there and was getting older and we had a really, really bad thunderstorm. And she went away and never came back. And we think that she probably got lost or got stuck in like a gutter somewhere and like just got trapped and maybe drowned. And we were not sure. So we never saw her. But it was a thing where she'd gotten, or maybe she was just old and sick and dying. And she's like, I'm going to go away and die and not make you deal with me. Because she also was very much like that, very independent. She didn't need people. And so she was gone. And we were very sad. And there was a really annoying neighborhood kid that just would always want to come out and play. Now, at this point, I was, I was in college and I was, you know, so we were all adults. Dink was old as hell. She did not want to interact with some child. And the child would always scream, Dink, 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 and want to play with this old cat. And Dink was just like, fuck you, kid. We've got nothing for each other. Leave me alone. You know, go chase the wind. Stop. So there was no love between, you know, between Dink and this kid. This kid was just like, I'm like Dink. So we did not enjoy anything about this child. And so there was one night and we had sort of come to the realization that Dink wasn't coming back. And mom was chopping peppers for supper, as you do. And this kid, we hear this kid from outside going, Dink, Dink. And my mom is chopping and just trying. We're trying to have a conversation. She can't handle it anymore. My mother has a complete psychotic break. She has a giant butcher knife. She runs outside into the yard, holding a butcher knife, screaming at this child. Dink's dead, all right? She's dead. She's not coming back. Dink's dead. And then comes back inside and then continues chopping peppers while the rest of the Drogi family is completely stunned, terrified, and then has this wonderful laugh and just is like, oh, because we're sick, we find that really funny. That kid never bothered us again, never asked about Dink again. That kid learned an important lesson. Don't cry for the dead. But for everybody that has an animal or had an animal that like loves them, that, you know, here's to you. It's a wonderful journey. And I think part of the reason I don't have an animal now is I'm just so afraid of losing one. Cause it's a lot. It's very emotional and they are your family. So, give your pet a pet. Put that on a bumper sticker. How delightful. Well, hello, you two.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello.
Oh, I'm sitting here with a delightful and lovely Stephanie Escajeda and Colleen Smith.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. I'm so
Friday
excited.
Afternoon. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, boy. All that's going on. How are you? Talk to me.
Well, my tongue's all bit up.
Why is your tongue bit up?
Well, do we want to go down that road?
This is a happy podcast. It's a human podcast, Colleen.
Okay.
So go down the road.
We'll just dip a toe in it. Otherwise, it'll turn into a sobbing podcast.
No, I know.
My dog of 8 years, we had to put him to sleep. And in the midst of hyperventilating crying, I had a seizure, which I've had seizures for almost, 8 years now?
Too? Yeah, probably
kind of.
So.
I got them right after we got Blue.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was like a 1-2 punch, but I bite the crap out of my tongue when I do it. And it's funny that Stephanie is here. Because I always think of Stephanie when my tongue is all bit up, because you had pieces of your tongue removed.
I did.
What?
Yes.
You didn't know that?
No.
That's a major revelation.
When you walked in, I was like, oh, yes, because we had that whole conversation when we ran into each other accidentally at a coffee bean in Westwood.
Oh my God, I love that.
Tongue-bitten
women in Westwood.
It was like
needing their latte.
It was like 4 or 5 years ago, and we were at that coffee bean that's on off of Little Santa Monica, right?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. Oh, sure.
What was I doing?
What's going on with you? And you're like, well, I had tongue cancer.
I did.
I did not know that you had tongue cancer. Now here's the thing. I did know. I feel like this is coming up, and I feel like on some level, I did know that you had like a mouth surgery situation. It's like weirdly coming back like a dream.
Yeah.
I don't know what to unpack all of this.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
We just tore up the studio.
Really did. Sorry about that.
Wow. Thanks a lot. But let's talk about your tongues. Okay.
Okay, great.
Okay. So
I do want to hear what would you say to somebody, because you know how they say have you ever heard put a spoon in someone's mouth?
Do not put anything in their mouth.
Right, okay, yeah, just let them bite their tongue.
That makes sense to me to not do that, because it just seems like just that they're going to bite at the spoon. It's just chaotic.
They could choke. The thing about it is it's actually physically impossible to swallow your tongue. That's a made up thing.
Oh, okay.
So you could choke on if somebody put something in your mouth and you bit it. And I have a wide tongue anyway. Like I bite my tongue kind of on my own. But yeah, when I have a seizure, usually it's I go to town on either side. So then I'm very like for a while.
Wow. And you still have not figured out what has brought these seizures on, or
it's just an errant brain cell or nerve or something.
That's so crazy.
Terrifying.
Yeah. It is terrifying, and it's terrifying being your friend, knowing that just because you have to wear this necklace, and at any moment it could just happen. And you've so handled it so beautifully, but
But the compounded problem of having a seizure, which already I'm sure is very inconvenient.
Yes.
On top of your dog dying. That's like,
I'm so sorry.
My brother and sister, because I have a loop where I don't know what's going on for about 15 minutes.
Is that how long they last?
No, the seizure only lasts like 30 seconds to a minute. It doesn't actually last that long. It's a lot of time of me being like, what happened? And they're like, you had a seizure. And I'm like, I did. And then I reloop and reloop until I'm finally like there again. And I guess the first thing I asked was like, where's Blue?
And
they were like, he's with Candace. And I was like, oh, really? And I asked that a bunch. And then when I was finally like back, then they told me. Because we put him to sleep. We walked him to the vet's car. We came back upstairs. My brother and sister went to take out the dog bed and I had it right after. Like, it was, like, right after.
Gosh. Mm. You mean literally the vet had come to your home and was leaving your house with your dog.
Yeah.
And then you had a seizure. Yeah. Wow. Girl. Oh.
And it can be brought on by stress or by...
This is the first time, like, I've seen it. Like, I've been on a plane, you know, where it's like, I obviously wasn't getting a ton of sleep or whatever, and, you know, we're high altitude, maybe.
What do you
happens.
Do when you're on a plane and you have a seizure?
Apparently a lot of people have seizures on planes, because somebody was like, is there a doctor here? And it turned out the people in front of us were doctors, and everybody was very lovely, and the flight attendants were very nice, and I peed myself, which was hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh. But this is the first time, like, I've slipped and fell and broke my elbow and was made grape lady pain noises, like, just horrible pain. And I was like, oh, I didn't have a seizure. This is the first time something where I can be like, I was directly freaked out about something. Right. And then I had one. Like,
and you can usually tell when you're about to have one.
Yeah,
right?
I got an aura.
Okay, okay. That's. But did you get that the other day?
With, yeah.
Okay.
Like, I felt the weird buzzing. And I was like, and then I lay down on my side.
Do you have, you have like only time to just like stop and get down to a safe place?
Is that, basically.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Interesting.
Well, I'm so sorry for your week. Because,
yeah,
I
that's
mean,
a lot.
And Blue was a great, great dog. He was wonderful and a friend to all of us. He was a friend to the community.
He was very supportive of the
arts. Yes, he was very community supportive
of
comedy.
He's a comedy consumer.
Yes,
really.
Yeah, he has heard so much gossip about just so much improv.
He knows who does good space work.
Yep.
Steals his jokes.
Yeah, that's great. And then, Stephanie, you had tongue cancer. How long ago was this?
I don't mean to laugh, but
my God, what are we talking about? We're literally going into, we're just in the shit today. It's good.
I know. Okay, good.
I love it. I mean, I love it because we're all here and we're just talking about being people, which is sometimes just fucking sucks. And that's all right.
I know. It's weird because one of the things that people ask me mostly is, how did you even know? Mm-hmm. And it was just, I have awful teeth. I'm one of those dental, I get fillings like once a year. Like there's always something happen. I have like four crowns now. And I take good care of my teeth. It's just like genetic.
Right,
so I had had a ton of cavities right before I went to college. I had to get them all done super in a jammed pack space. And the guy left some amalgam that was kind of sloshing over my tooth and cutting my tongue constantly.
Oh, okay, okay.
So during college, but you're in college, and it was like, I was like having my...
Drink more.
And smoke, I was having my tongue cut and heal and cut and heal, and I always felt like, oh, something's cutting my tongue. And then kind of in junior year, I just noticed it stopped healing. It just constantly hurt. And that's when, after I graduated from college, I had a biopsy.
So you had 2 years where you were just like, ow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but that's being 22.
I know.
I mean, I would live with, this door to my bedroom is jammed and I'm like throwing myself against my bedroom door just to get myself out the door for the day.
But
I'm never going to fix it,
right.
You know? That was the same with my tongue. It was just like, well, I'm going to live with it. And so finally I said to my dad, I kind of begged him. I was actually having a filling at my dad was a doctor, and I was having a filling done across the hall at a dentist's office. And that dentist had told me when I'd showed him my tongue, maybe a year and a half before, he was like, oh, yeah, no, it'll heal. And things heal really quickly in the mouth. And I was like, no, you don't get it. And then when I went back the year later and I had this filling,
you don't get it.
And he's like, why are you? I'm right here. You don't have to talk like that.
You don't have to whisper and a scream.
You don't have to sound like you're falling down a cave. Like, you're fine. So then I said to him, hey, doctor, do you remember about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, when you told me things heal quickly and this will get better? I just want you to look at my tongue again today. And he looked at it and he was like, you need to get that biopsied right away. It looks angry at you. And I was like, it feels angry. And I went over to my dad, and he is a surgeon, and he was just like, oh, fine, I'll biopsy it right now. And I was like, oh no, I have an appointment with an actual facial surgeon. He's like, no dentist is going to work on my daughter. So he just like, you know, they numbed me further in my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a biopsy, and it showed that I had precancerous, like it's called dysplasia.
Mm-hmm.
And then UCLA started treating me, and over the next 10 years, they just watched it. And then one day they were like, this has moved from mild to moderate, and there is no scale towards cancer. It could just go. And so they planned a surgery, and they removed like, I don't know, 2-3 millimeters off the right side of my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
and the recovery to that was awful. But
you can't swallow
and you can't eat. And I'm a comedian, you know, so I was like, this sucks.
All I want to do is talk and
eat.
Right.
Then they found that there was cancer in what they took out. So that was good that we got it, but it was carcinoma in situ, meaning like it was all contained. Because every time I tell people, like, I'm getting this surgery to remove part of my tongue because they think that there could be cancer. People were like, oh, I knew somebody who had tongue cancer.
And they trail off.
I was like, oh, are they dead? They're like, yeah. I shouldn't have brought that up. And you're like,
oh my God.
I guess you just have no filter.
But I would imagine too, yours, it was so clear to trace where it came from, how it happened. You know, from that dental situation.
Yeah, I mean,
you were so young. I would imagine tongue cancer that's mostly for like heavy smokers late.
Cigar smokers.
Yeah,
right? So it was like mouth for cancer.
Chaw or whatever.
Crazy shit happens, of course, always, and it's never fun to.
And then it recurred. So I always had biopsies after that to make sure because they didn't get clean margins. Cancer tongue. They didn't get clean margins. Then it recurred, but I was engaged to be married at the time, and it was just such a different. I really do credit the cancer, my tongue surgery with helping me kind of finally get settled down with somebody that was actually good for me. Because basically your mouth is like a sexual organ. And if you can't use it, yeah. I mean, I couldn't make conversation with people. I didn't want to have conversations that were kind of like first date stuff, like, oh, what are you up to?
It's right.
Like,
that's interesting.
I've just learned how to talk. I don't want to talk about nothing.
Right.
And then also I had to, like, for the first time in my whole sexual adult life, I had to, like, stop making out with people.
Right.
Like, I couldn't just go, oh, I don't like this guy, but he's cute. I'm going to make out with him.
Huh.
Like, yeah, I couldn't make bad choices.
So you really were to, like, economy of words.
Yep.
And let's get to what's really important.
Yep. And then I'm putting off, like, the intimacy, which I usually used to rush into.
Right.
Let's be honest.
Yeah,
you know who you are out there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's also weird because I had skin cancer on my nose.
You?
Like, about 2 years ago. Mm. And had it removed and... it was like, you know, one of those things that, and both my parents had it when they were about my age.
Oh, wow.
So as a kid, I remember thinking like, oh, I'll probably get that. I mean, it's like, you know, it's one of those things. It's like when you're pale in complexion, you know, as the drogies are, it's just going to pop up. And, you know, we obviously never took care of our skin as we should have and all that. And it was fine, but it's still getting that news, like having someone say, you have cancer. Mm-hmm. It's just like that, those words. And you're like, it's skin cancer and it's treatable. Yet there's still like, what was that actor? James, is it Remar? Whatever. Who was the actor that just died of skin cancer? Like had it for like 20 years and like, I can't think of his last name. Anyway,
I didn't know this.
Fantastic. You're like, anything can happen. And you're like going through and it just is that very...
Yes.
Terrifying time, and that was around the same time that another friend of ours had testicular cancer, and so he was dealing with that, which is also very treatable.
Right.
But it's just one of those things of like, it sucks to be sick, and it sucks to, and it's all the, you know, and it's just, it's hard to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to not think about anything else.
Yep.
And, you know, and, but the, on the flip side, like, bullshit doesn't matter, you know, and like, you really don't care about, you know, any tiny little minutiae in your life.
You do go into an amazing space of like reevaluating your life for what is actually important.
Right.
And for example, I went into it because I was 31, I think, when I first had it, and or maybe it was 29 or 30, I can't remember. But I remember thinking, oh, great, here I am, I have tongue cancer, and I don't have a boyfriend or any kind of mate that like is going to take care of me. My parents have to. And now I'm going to have this weird, you know, tongue thing. And I don't, maybe I'll die. I don't know. Is that kind of like your head spins and you're like, am I just going to like die alone? Is this what's going to happen? I'm never going to have anybody to take care of me except my parents. There was that feeling. And so I just put out to sort of my world of friends. I was like, hey, I'm going to be at the hospital. I'm recovering from this tongue surgery. And the wave of support that came back and people that came to the hospital to visit me and people that came to my house for my recovery was so uplifting that literally I went from feeling like I was an incomplete person without somebody in my life to feeling like, oh, I don't need anybody. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
And that's weirdly right when another complete person came into my life.
Wow.
So I honestly, it's amazing how often, because I, for those of you, you two know this, but for those of you listening who don't know me, I live with my little sister and my brother lives in LA. And I have a roommate that I've lived with for like 18 years now or something. So I very much have this family, literally family, that I've known some my whole life and some for a very long portion of my life. And so we're constantly saying things like, well, why don't you just invite us over? Why, the Smiths will take care of it. Like, we'll do this, this, and this. And people will be like, yeah, sure, sure. And then they don't, or they do. But I realize that I don't actually do that often. I don't, because I have my sister and my brother, I usually save all the messy for them and don't reach out. And times when, like, when I first had seizures, or anything in our just community of people that where something bad has happened, and there's almost like an embarrassment of riches of people who all they want to do is help and give and do something, and it's it's incredible, but it definitely, it's sad that it takes a tragedy for you to realize.
Yeah, it does. And it's like, well, I think also, I mean, living out here, we all are so spread out and doing our own thing, and it's sort of... But we also have this very wide network of, and we don't always see each other. We will go months without seeing each other.
Because we've like, known each other all probably like 15 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Which is crazy. It feels like it's less than that, but it's,
Easily. And so you know a lot more people than you think you do out here and in other ways. And people just like, and also we have very intense relationships. And then when they go away, we don't see each other for a long time. But then we, you know, and so... You know, and also I think people just want to help and know what to do. You know, it's like we don't feel like it's a small town until things like this happen. And you're like, oh, everybody wants to, you know, help.
And tragedies are good for like clearing away the dead rubbish that's been like you when it's like, oh, something happened and that friend didn't call. And then you're kind of like, that friend is kind of an out. Like they're always been an asshole.
Right.
And then you allow, it also allows people to step up in a way that you would never see them step up without there being a circumstance to do so.
Yeah. And, you know, I talked about this a few weeks ago on my show, but a comedian, Gary Shapiro, who I did lots of shows with off and on, and I didn't know him very well, but I always adored him and he was a delight. He died suddenly a few weeks ago. And a friend of mine called me to tell me, and it was so lovely that she called, like she thought of me to call and tell me that, because I wasn't like an immediate friend that you would have to tell. But I also was like, I'm so glad I didn't find out another way, or, you know, and it was something that like, it took a lot for her. I'm like, how many phone calls is she making right now to call and tell people? But what a lovely gesture to like, to have a connection where we used to always do. That's how you always used to find out things. But now with, you know, social media, you'll see it splattered somewhere, or like, you know, you kind of have to like Google someone and be like, did they really die? Or is this a weird joke or what's going on? And, you know, and to have that, just to have that human connection and for her to even think of me, you know, like that was really touching to me.
So
in a way that I was like, I didn't expect to, as sad as I was on one hand about Gary, I was also so touched that my friend was like, thought, you know, of me to do that. And I think we all are a lot more, you know, connected and together than we think we are, even when we don't see each other for, you know, long stretches of time. And we're also like, bleeding, feeling, arty people. So, like, we need to, like, take care. You know what I mean? I think there's also that. Like, we really just, like, you know, we've also, I mean, those of us that have known each other 15 years, we've grown up together. I mean, like, I've known you guys since I was in my early 20s. And I'm sorry, I was burping. I wasn't editing. People listening, that might sound like I'm editing my age since
Drew
I was.
Drew is 75 years old.
I know. But, you know, I mean, like, you spend your 20s, you know, and you grow up together and like you learn a lot and make a lot of mistakes together. And, you know,
I also think always just now there's a new element to it of like, how do you how do you grieve? How do you show emotion? How do you deal with anything? Mm-hmm. Pre the internet, pre anything, still the idea that you would like announce it to your class or cry in school or,
right.
you know, who would know, who would get told, mm. why and when, and like what my parents told us and didn't tell us and all that kind of stuff. And so now it's that feeling of like, when something big happens in your life, you're like, do I send out an email? Do I call people? Is that weird? Do I tweet about it? Do I like, you don't, and I feel like, whether you're an
Well, you don't have any responsibility to do anything when you're the person who's lost something. But I know what you mean. You know, I mean, I don't know that there's any right way of doing it.
Right.
I've also felt like I have consumed other people's tragedy by Facebook and been like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, it's like, oh, that guy I did a show with once, his dad died. Like,
right.
I can say I'm sending love, but it's like, I actually don't know what...
But it's really all you can ever say, and it's something that, like, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about it a lot, Colleen, we, you know, have lost fathers, and it's like, when something like that happens, and you're like, all you really can hear is, I love you, I'm thinking of you, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other, like, beyond that... There's not really not much more that you really, and it's all I can say when I, you know, say, to, you know, and I only know that sadly from personal experience because when I was going through it and when people say to me, oh, I know what you're going through. It's I really recoiled at that because I was like, you do? Because I don't know what I'm going through.
Yeah.
So please tell me what I'm going through.
You can't. And I didn't know you were me.
And I know people have good intentions and I know that they, but I had someone tell me that, you know, I mean, within a week of losing my father, she was like, yeah, I know what you're going through. I mean, I feel that way with my divorce. And it's just like, no, you don't.
Right.
Like, that's so shitty. And I know you're trying to connect. And it's something that, like, I know we all try to do. And I do this a lot on the show where people come in with a story and I go, I feel the same way. And I've had that. And I understand. You know, and I get why we want to find similar, you know, you, just like you said, you had tongue cancer and yours was a lot more life-threatening than mine. And I'm like, I had skin cancer. So no. I know we all do it. But it's a weird thing where people don't know how to be or don't know what to say. And really the simplest thing is, I think, the best. And it just means I love you and I'm here.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's always nice when people, you know, do things for you and they want to, you know, bring you food. I mean, it's so Southern, but it's like everybody just shows up with food or, like, you know, gives you rides places or whatever you sort of just need in your life, because you do go through periods where you're just like, I don't want to get out of bed. So come over and help me get out of bed today. You know, and little things like that. Sure. But, you know, it is also hard. And also we all live such public lives now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a thing where, you know, when things happen and you do post it and it's like you have people. And so, like, you can be doing fine that day and then someone can randomly bring up to you on the street. I mean, I was having this conversation yesterday with some friends who are famous. And
I'm just going to say it.
Famous. And they were just talking about, like, when they have a breakup. And how difficult it is that, like, it's like one thing when, like, you have to deal with a breakup and you get over it, but then you're walking down the street and a stranger just goes, how's so-and-so? Or I heard that you broke up with so-and-so. And people are just like, they forget that you're a person and you have to, you know, put on a face and not be that. And all you want to do is scream at them, like, mind your own fucking business. But then the story is that person's an asshole.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's a very awkward, but on some level, we're all famous in that way because of Facebook and Twitter and
everything.
We all have that. Like, it's like, it doesn't even,
yeah,
you know,
we'll be like, oh, Montana looked fun. They'll be like, how? Oh, right.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, I don't know. I just was on your trip to Montana with you, basically through pictures.
Right. Yeah. And even with this show, like, I just say so many things and it's all fine and great. But then I'll have people that will know things about me. And then I'll be like, how did you know that? And they'll be like, I listened to your show. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm glad you listened to the show. But, like, I'm just like, I, you know, yeah. And so I, you know, to me, it's like fun to just like share so many things. But it is a little bit strange that we all kind of hold on to pieces of information. And then when you're going through something, it's very hard to grieve alone or to know how to grieve because you're having so many people tell you how to grieve or telling you how to feel.
I feel like for me, when my dad died, I went right back to working and I I did that thing that it's always interesting where, you know, you go like, hi, how are you? Because I waited tables. And someone goes, good, how are you? And you can't say good. You know, you have to just say, I'm fine. And most people don't notice because they're not listening to their waiter. They just want their barbecue chicken pizza.
Right.
But this one woman said, just fine. And I was and I was like,
string has been pulled.
Yeah. And I was like, well,
the sweater's coming upon you.
You know, and I told her, I was like, well, you know, honestly, my dad just died. And she said,
oh my God.
And she was like, oh, you know, I lost my father however many years ago. And we just talked about it. And it was really helpful. It was really helpful because it is weird. It's almost like you have a giant gaping head wound or like a parrot on your shoulder and no one's talking about it. Mm-hmm. And you come back to a group of people who have never met your father, like know nothing about this giant chunk of your life.
Right.
It's very hard, yeah.
And so you're just like existing and everyone's ignoring it. Or not even ignoring it, they just don't know about it. And this is a person who like, she's just a lady, but and it was really helpful. But my little sister had the exact opposite reaction. Like people would try to come up to her and talk to her about their stories. And she'd be like, I got my grief. Like, I don't need your grief on my grief. Like, this is my, like, I'm sorry that happened to you, but I don't need to like, help you with yours. And I circling back to what you said, I do think the best response is always like, I'm sorry, that sucks. And like,
I keep thinking that that lady like on the tip line of your bill just went, we talk.
I
think I've done enough.
And then, like, you see her like a week later, and she's talking to another waiter and sharing in their grief, and they're like, oh, "This woman's crazy."
She's just trying to get out of tipping.
I have weirdly had like strange customers. Like, one guy was a therapist, and I was in the middle of dealing with my aunt going insane and us having to commit her, and he was like, he like really talked me through it. It was like. Working the counter at California Pizza Kitchen.
I mean, all types go to the CPK.
Yeah, the CP. It takes all kinds.
Oh, my God.
Girl, you've had an adventure of a life. Loving it.
I mean, we're already getting so... We've already been so deep today, which I love. But do either of you have a story or a revelation or something you'd like to talk about?
Let's see. Do you want to go first, Stephanie? Do you got it?
I suppose I could.
Yeah,
I forced you to reveal that you had tongue cancer.
I mean, I know.
I was so, it was like one of those things I just didn't want to come out.
Everyone on the street is going to
And now you're
going to
be like, I don't like feta cheese. It's just never my thing.
Actually, well, yeah, I'll lighten it up.
No, it doesn't have to be light. It just,
No, it's, but I was thinking about it. I was like, what have I really never talked about before? Because I'm such a blabbermouth.
Yeah, I know.
I was once being groomed to be a part of the American Mime Theater Company.
Oh, my God. Yes. I love that you were being groomed for it.
I was. So basically, this is when I graduated from college in 1998, and then I went to New York, and I had the weirdest jobs, like, and the weirdest auditions, because this was when... I worked for Citibank and all these things, and I would steal all of their envelopes and their postage, and I would send out to like backstage and all of those where you could submit yourself.
Right,
of course,
sure.
they're the worst auditions.
The
in
worst,
the, world.
The weirdest.
I one time spent like an afternoon like crawling around during Halloween dressed as Elvira.
Oh my God!
Doing that, just
crawling around.
Yeah, like doing.
Did Elvira crawl?
No, but I mean, you know, just kind of slinking around.
I
wasn't doing an impression of her because she's actually very funny. And that would be.
She's a genius,
just wanted like silent me, just kind of showing up in people's offices and like scaring them. For
My God!
I know. I don't.
Silent
I know.
Crawling Elvira. You know, you get it.
Or like
here's
I was
$30. Go. You know.
Yeah, Karen. Right. I was Karen Finley's assistant.
Oh my
her.
God! What was that like?
I mean,
Colleen,
insane.
Do you know Karen Finley?
Karen Finley, I was gonna
chocolate smeared woman.
Yeah, she like put avocados in her ass, and like she was like she was one of the wasn't she one of the NEA?
She was, and it was during that case.
Okay, so she was one of the top five, the NEA five. There were people, the National Endowment for the Arts, the people who were. On the banned list, and they were, you know, the religious right had a huge war against them. They're pretty awesome.
Yeah, they had a Supreme Court case, and they lost.
Yeah, yes, they did.
Yeah, and it was like, was it Jose Serrano? Am I saying that wrong? I'm not
sure.
Oh boy, Piss Christ, you know where
Piss
it's
Christ.
Like,
Have you that? There was the
I don't know any of
or Mapplethorpe. Okay. I think I
do know
Mapplethorpe.
Mapplethorpe was earlier, I believe.
No, but these were the people I think in the suit. No,
Tim. Oh my God, why am I losing his last name? He's a genius performance artist. Gay. Oh, Tim.
Oh,
He's so great.
Anyways, look
at
that.
Yeah, he was one of them. Yeah.
I feel like in the movie of this, I'm that person who gets ushered in so that you have to explain everything
to
them.
Oh, exactly. Here's the thing about NEA 5. Exactly.
I would like just catch her chocolate smeared panties and stuff when she would like disrobe.
Tim Miller, I thought of it right now. I have to say it.
Okay, got you. Do, please.
I love you, Tim Miller.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So one of the auditions was to go to the American Mime Theater Company and like become potentially one of their company. And I, like a company member. And I went and there was just like, 30 women or something. And we all just started like.
It was all women?
Yes, because this was the thing. They had lost one of their female performers and they needed it to balance the troupe.
Oh, okay. So it was 30 women for one role.
30 women, and then it got whittled down to 3. And we had to go week after week, and basically there was a guy, he was chain smoking, this like elderly guy just shouting like, up, hit, and drop, hit. Like, because in mime, you have to kind of come to like a rest. Like,
oh,
I see.
Yeah, sure.
You really
it's like
kind
of mechanical and
right. So
crisp and precise.
And he was literally like Debbie Allen, with a stick just sitting there barking like mime commands at us.
Oh my God, this is my favorite thing ever.
And I literally like at one point, I was just sitting there like, what? And so anyhow, we'd work our way out of a box and like run against the wind and like rope climb to nowhere. And he pulled me aside and was like, we have chosen you. We would like you to be the member. We're inviting you into the company. And I had this like panic because the man was so mean. He was like this alcoholic, chain smoking, crazy person. And I just saw, because it was really like, it's a job.
Right.
And I do kind of, I was good at it, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it was just that idea like, this isn't what I thought I was going to do though when I came to New York.
Right, right.
And I just had to walk away. And so, of course, I took the stairs behind the couch.
Wow. Okay. So how did you?
I took the elevator down to nowhere.
The only mime I can think of besides Marcel, right?
Painted yourself invisible.
Am I the only mime you've ever met?
Do you know Amy Rhodes?
Yes. I know
Amy Rhodes. Amy Rhodes was a mime.
Yeah.
She has a whole thing. She did mime all through high school. And she was talking about how she was like, believe it or not, I was a virgin in high school because I was a mime. What was I going to say? Oh, how did you break the news to angry, alcoholic, smoking cane Debbie Allen man?
Yeah,
you know what? If I'm remembering it correctly, because remember, I think I was, this would have made me 21.
Uh-huh.
I would do what I did back then, which was probably I told him to his face, I'll think about it.
Right.
And then went home and then never returned a phone call.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying I'm proud of that part of
me,
but
I'm just
that's sort of how I dealt
he,
with really how, uncomfortable things.
How he related to it. Oh, I mean, I'm still kind of that way at 40. I don't not return phone calls, but I will certainly be like, oh, yeah, we'll see. Well, I don't know.
Right.
Just because like there's no, especially in the face of like an angry drunk who's going to make you immediately, who's going to have to insult you. I just always wonder because in my years of doing like early shows in LA, and I remember I was in this sketch group and it was with this crazy guy, and then he rewrote all the sketches and made everything horrible, and then so he was doing the next show and I was like, I'll think about it, kind of a thing.
Right.
And then I finally was like, I'm just not gonna do it. I don't know how I told him, and he went off on me and was just like, don't ever think about coming back here.
Oh, I know.
And like, it was just this, and it was like, you're not as good as you think you are. Like, he had to insult me.
Scorched earth, right.
He had to insult me in order to have power because he couldn't understand me leaving him, me not needing him. And he was like, I gave you this opportunity and like, I thought you were going to be, and it was after I had done one show with him. And it was like, the fact that I wasn't going to do the very next show, he couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And like, some of these people in those positions of power are just like, so that's why I asked.
And
like,
no, that was it. I mean, this looked like, so I'm sure I probably walked away and said maybe, and then never came back. Mm. Because this was a man who was consuming everything, just cigarette after cigarette, just kind of like all the air in the room, any joy. I mean, he was such a taskmaster. And also, I don't think I almost ever saw him mime. It wasn't like he got up and you just had this respect for his craft. He was terrorizing these little mimes into, they weren't little, you know, terrorizing these mime people into form. And I just thought, yeah, if I tell him this, he will consume me. He will like make me, he'll make a fucking meal out of me. If he can do that about the way my wrist lands in, like some kind of pose when I'm trying to hold an imaginary umbrella, like imagine what he's going to do if I tell him go fuck himself.
Right, exactly.
Could you go on the website now and see if he is still alive?
First of all, I don't.
And who else is in the company?
Who's going to, like, in an imaginary computer they create? No, I'm kidding. This is always the other thing is like, we've really, I mean, look, we all love improv, but there is something where it's like, to what end we'll pretend? Like, let's stop here, you know?
Yeah,
and so
I
have not, I, when I was thinking about the minor revelation, I had to come, I like, it came out of me. Like, I was like, oh, wow, I remember when I mimed. And so I have not looked it up, or I don't remember. And that guy was dead in 2 years, I'm sure. Anyways.
That's so crazy. Yeah. And I also just sort of wondered, like, did they do shows, like, as a company?
It was like a touring thing. Yeah, it was one of two, I think, mime troupes in New York that were really, I mean, it was this prominent. Again, somebody from the mime community is going to come back and be like, they're shit. They're just called the American Mime Theater Company. I mean, at that, because also, this is 98, 99.
People were trying out. It had to have had some reputation.
Yeah. I think it was, you know, because you see an ad in backstage.
That's the other thing, too. At that stage, you're just like, I'll take anything. It's a job, and I'll do anything.
And this was pre-internet.
I mean, if you're like me, because I was that way, I would just audition for so many things and get almost nothing. I mean, the amount of stuff the amount of apartments I went into and auditioned in bedrooms, and I auditioned in, like, the weirdest situations, and, like, it was just for terrible, like, student films and things, and I was like, it's a job, it's a gig,
exactly.
I'm gonna do it. Or I would drive like an hour and a half to a theater to go audition for some play, and I'm like, I was gonna rehearse for like 6 weeks and then do like a 6 week, 8 week run in, like, you know, Sierra Madre or somewhere. Yeah. Like, oh, sure, that's you know, great for everyone involved. Have you seen Sally Jesse Raphael's mime video? It was one of the earliest Funny or Die videos. She plays it so real. You don't know if she's kidding or not.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure she's not. It is one of the funniest, greatest things. You definitely,
I have got to look that
check
up.
It out. It's about her life as a mime. It's like people didn't realize that Sally Jesse Raphael was also a mime. And she's so invested in it. It's pretty wonderful, and it makes you love her.
Oh, wow.
When you watch it, you're like, oh, yeah, she gets it.
I mean, that's the thing, is it really was, I mean, there's a dance to it. There's like an art. There's a, you really, I mean, you so have to pour yourself in, obviously creating the nothing that you're working against, you know, it's all space work, basically, which I'm not great at either.
It's just odd.
No, but anyhow.
Oh my God. I'm horrible at all of it. I'm horrible at space work. I yell at my students about doing space work all the time. For those of you listening, it's like the space that you give objects that are not there. So how you hold a mug of coffee or a telephone or a gun, you have to leave space in your hand for those objects and not just indicate them with your fingers.
Yeah, if you put a chair there, you can't walk through the chair.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just rarely do it when I perform. I'm not good at it. But Colleen, you're amazing at puppet improv. And I did one class of that and I was so bad and so frustrated and mad and throwing puppets everywhere. And I was like, this is hard. And I always blamed being tall as part of it, but you're also very tall. And
it's like a certain amount of tall. Like, I'm the right tall. If you're taller than me, then you really have to crouch.
Yeah. And you're, how tall are you?
6'1".
Oh, yeah, I'm 6'3". So that's, you know.
It does get too
tall. Even though I
I
randomly visited my IMDb page the other day just to check in. And
yeah, always
I don't
drop
know,
in,
have a
see
great,
the ladies.
I really enjoy my credits. Mm-hmm. I was just curious. I hadn't seen it when I was like, and someone had added on there that I was 6'1". And I was like, whoever added that detail is incorrect. So I'm going to leave it because I think it's just cute and fun.
Yeah, we'll probably shrink to that size anyways.
Oh, I would love to be 6'1", actually. I don't enjoy the extra 2 inches, to be perfectly honest.
You are tall.
I'm a little too tall. I'm too tall for my personality, I think. I think what? I would...
That's a statement.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean it in like, I'm small. I just feel like whenever I see people, they always say, oh my God, you're so much taller than I remember. Because I just don't think I come off like a taller...
I definitely, as a tall person, when people are always like, wow, you're tall. I didn't realize you were this tall. So much of it is like, I don't have really long legs. Mm-hmm. And I think when you see women, especially because they tend to wear things up at their waist and stuff, mm-hmm. but it's usually they have really long legs. So they look tall from a distance. From a distance, I look normal sized, and then I get close.
You get close, like, oh, wow, I think it's one of those awful things about just being sort of a basic, like, human, a basic bitch, is people going, oh, wow, they're tall. Oh,
I know.
Yeah, they
people
don't have anything else to
say. Oh, boy, you're short.
They just want to say the most obvious
thing. I'm sorry your dad died.
It's just what people have to say.
Just a basic.
Those are the three things people say.
It's your hot.
I love it. This episode of Minor Revelations is brought to you by Fulton & Rourke. Fulton & Rourke is a men's fragrance and grooming company that specializes in solid colognes, shave, and shower products, all designed to make getting ready easier and more enjoyable. Their travel-friendly, wax-based colognes go anywhere. Plus, there's nothing to break or spill. And of course, they all smell fantastic. Fulton & Rourke's bar soap is designed to exfoliate the skin with or without a washcloth. And GQ Magazine just named their shave cream the very best on the market today. Try it for yourself at FultonAndRourke.com and save 15% off your purchase by using the code FERAL at checkout. I wear jeans all the time, and I usually wear one pair until I wear them out. And it's so hard to find that one perfect pair of jeans that's not, you know, insanely expensive. So there are these jeans by this company named Distilled, and they are incredible, and they are luxury-grade denim at an affordable price. They would normally cost you hundreds of dollars, but they are only $75. They have the same fabrics, factories, wash houses as the best-known brands and designers, but they skip the markups and the middlemen, and the result is pure, unadulterated denim without the retail runaround. You just need to go to distilled.com, and that's spelled DSTLD.com, and see where minimalist design meets maximum comfort. It's really hard to find great jeans that don't have insane jewels on them or ironically ripped kneecaps or just like bizarre things. It's just great. It's hard to find a really just decent pair of jeans. I have the answer for you. Go on distilled.com. That's DSTLD. And you will get incredible jeans that start at just $75. They cut out the middleman. They just deliver them right to you. Just go to DSTLD.com right now and use the promo code FERAL at checkout and get 20% off your first pair. That's DSTLD.com and promo code FERAL. 5 letters, DSTLD.com. Colleen.
Okay. I just thought of this one actually, and I think only like Jennifer knows this. So this is a real revelation.
Oh, I can't wait.
I think I lost my virginity twice.
What?
Need to hear
what
it.
Do you
okay.
mean?
So when I was 17 years old, I lost my virginity to my boyfriend at the time. We went to a neighbor island. We had sex.
Because you're from Hawaii.
I'm from Hawaii, so
you say neighbor island. We need to make sure what that means.
We went to Big Island, Hawaii. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And you're originally from?
I'm originally from Oahu.
Okay.
So we had sex, but we didn't know what we were doing because we were both virgins, and so it took a long time.
You plan on, you're like, let's use
everything? Yes, there was plan, there was lubricants, there were various kinds of birth control, there was tons of stuff, except there was no foreplay and no alcohol. I didn't drink then. So just no, like, emotional lubrication or personal lubrication, just outside lubrication. And so we tried it from—
plenty of Glide.
Yeah, plenty of Glide. We tried it from every angle. You know, there was penetration, but it was painful, and we did it that one time, and then like the rest of the weekend I was away, I was like, we're not doing it. Like, my vagina's sore, no. And then I was like, we're not having sex again until I'm on the pill, because we had
condom.
We had a condom. I put this like foam up in me and we had spermicidal lubricant, but I was like, we're not having it on the regular until I'm on the pill. So then I got on the pill and we moved to LA and we had sex like once, but it was the same thing of like, okay, I think I'm getting the hang of it. But then he, you know, he was new to it. So he's like, you got to slow down or I'm going to orgasm in about 4 seconds. And I was like, okay, now, yeah, I'm done. Like so we only had a couple failed attempts and then we broke up. But we stayed, we lived together, but we broke up. And that was my get out of jail thing of like, well, then I'm off the pill and we're never having sex. So I threw all the pills away and all the birth control away. And we did everything but for like 9 months until he moved back to Hawaii. So then several years, I won't tell you how many, go by. And my only friends are gay men and women. So I'm not getting laid at all. And I finally was like, too much time has gone by and I'm in a situation where I can sleep with somebody, and I trust this person, they're good looking, and I have zero emotional investment in them at all.
Yeah.
So I can just have sex with this person, and it will be fine. It's like the safest one-night stand. And I had sex with him, and it, like, at this point, I was very drunk, and all there was tons of foreplay.
Yes.
And we had sex, and it wasn't great, but it was whatever, and it was one of those things where I was like, well, you know, it was on, like, the floor, and I got up, and I was like, well, I'm going to go home. And I went home, and I went to the bathroom, and I was bleeding. And I was like, oh, maybe you just started your period. But then I didn't have my period for, like, 3 days.
Mm.
So what I think happened was that I never had my I don't think my hymen ever broke because it never bled. With the first guy.
Was he small?
No.
You don't need to let me
the
know.
First guy,
I don't need to know.
This is also
I'm sorry. I just got so curious about
my recommendation for anyone losing their virginity.
I had the exact same thought, Stephanie. I was like, well, then maybe
I'm curious about an 18-year-old's penis in the past.
Actually, he was 21, if it makes you feel better.
Okay.
No, my recommendation to all girls losing your virginity, lose them to men with small penises, because he didn't have a small penis. He had a large penis. I think that was part of the problem. It was like a good 7 inches and like... And it, it was a large.
Both of our eyebrows raised.
We're like, all right, sure.
Go on. Did it curve? Did it?
It didn't.
Okay,
it was straight. It was all those lovely things. It was a lovely penis. And so I think I never broke my hymen. And that second guy broke my hymen.
Wow.
So I don't know if that counts
again,
as...
Again, was he long?
Yes.
I mean, I don't mean... Okay.
I have weird...
Colleen only sleeps with well-endowed
men.
She leaves pockets of time in between. She lets her hymen grow back, and then she's like, go to town,
go to
donger.
I spell hymen with a Y, and you spell it I-G-H, hymen. It's up there. You got to be off.
I don't know that it can grow back.
Maybe you have a high... Is that a thing that's like the hymens... Are they different...
You can have long... You could have different sized...
Vaginas are so fascinating because
they're
just such... No, I mean because I spend so very, very little time with them, but I also am just fascinated. Like when I've seen pictures of how wildly different they look on the outside.
Yeah. So I didn't know about that, and then we went and saw your show, and there was that weird fight afterwards about different styles of vaginas.
What show was this?
We went and saw Mommy, not Mommy Dearest, what it was.
Die, Mommy, Die.
Uh-huh. And earlier that day, someone had posted a BuzzFeed list of the different types of vaginas that a bikini waxer described. Mm-hmm. And I
have no memory of this. We talked about this?
Well, you maybe were at a different table, but
okay.
We were all discussing the different kinds, and I was like, oh, I have either the Barbie kind or the like puffy Barbie kind, whatever that kind that is. And
now I have to hear all the kinds, but I guess I'll just go
people
Google
at the table
it.
Were like, no,
best.
You don't. Yeah. Like I was bragging because I have like a what is considered standard vagina. I'm like, I'm not bragging.
I just like, breaking news on BuzzFeed. What's your vagina like?
Yeah. And it turns out like, somebody at the table thought I was like bragging. And I'm like, I will go home and double check for you.
Oh my God.
Like as far as I know, no part of the inside of my vagina sticks out of my lips. Like
now we're going to have to, that's a vulva, right?
Yeah.
Great.
Right.
Just make it. Vagina's the canal.
Yeah. They were talking about the outside. You know, like there's the Barbie vagina where it's just like the lips come together and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But she don't have nothing though.
The lips come together and there's nothing outside of it.
Oh, they don't have lips on a Barbie.
They just have
like a straight old
straight. So imagine lips added to that.
Got it.
Whereas,
did this person think that you like literally had like a doll crotch where there was like zero?
No, I think they were saying that like because on the drawings, there was like curtains where it was like, right, they're closed at the top, but they're, mm-hmm, kind of open at the bottom. One was like a lotus flower, so it, mm-hmm, opened in the middle.
Steph is figuring out, like, what is mine?
Sitting on it. There's horseshoe. There was the fully clover.
Purple clover, rainbow.
Yeah, there were different styles of it. Like, one, I think there was like nun. I don't know. There were names.
Nun!
Like a flying nun.
A nun-gina.
Like Sally Field's habit.
Or maybe it was like it revealed itself at the top, but not the bottom, so it was like a nun's head and a habit.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Gosh, it's a lot.
This bikini waxer has taken a lot of time
studying all day. And they see bare vaginas, because, mm-hmm, hair probably covers a lot.
Yes.
But if you're doing Brazilians all day, you're really going to see the inside.
You're getting
of the
all in there.
Yeah.
Vaginas.
Wow. So, that was the one and only time you slept with that second guy?
Did he
notice blood? Like, did he call you and be like, are you okay?
No, I don't think he noticed blood. He was very drunk, so I don't think he noticed. We were both very, very drunk. Mm-hmm. But I've never been bled subsequently, so it's not like... And time has gone by between that and then the next time I had sex.
Right.
Where I don't think I'm regrowing hymens. I think I never...
That'd be kind of insane.
The worst superpower ever.
That'd be horrible. Because a lot of girls lose their hymen when they are like... little kids, like they fall out of a tree or they're riding horses or something.
Oh, you
like
did?
That.
Yeah, on a bike. Yeah. Uh-huh. I just remember being stupidest idea ever to ride a bike without a seat. And it wasn't like that, like the old joke of riding a bike without a seat. Just the seat had fallen off. And so what you do normally is you stand up most of the time anyways. But I went over a bump and I was like, nah, like it nailed me. And I was like, ouch. And not like in, but just like... From the outside, it was such a, I don't know, I didn't have a hymen break my first time.
Yeah. So I never got fully up there.
Well, and you want to, I mean, because that's part of the thing with sex is that you have to get through the painful, weird parts. You have to do those a couple times before you really start to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's
painful.
No
one says like, oh my God, my first time was so amazing, so magical, and... It's like, or it felt so good. You know, it might be like it was really special and lovely and we had a great, you know, and we really loved each other. But like, it's also like, it's quick and it hurts and it's just, And it's also so mental. You have to like sort of give up and just release and
It's a bizarre, it's connected. Like, it's amazing how much you can lock down those muscles when you like, we're just like, they like, I mean, you can't lock them down, like prevent stuff, but you can definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be like making a case for those people who are like, a woman's body can prevent rape.
No.
Oh, but it. Oh, yes, but it can. Let's definitely drive home that narrative. But, like that senator, who is that senator that was like, a woman when she just when it's not going well, she can actually shut down and make the butt. Make
I don't
the
remember his
baby
name.
Not make the sperm not hit, yeah. connect to the
we
egg.
We have that ability.
You have that ability. if men really, that's why they're terrified of women. They really think that women are witches, and that when they give women so much power in that way, like. Yeah, women can do that. They actually have the ability to.
Also, even don't you think, I mean, just speaking specifically of vaginas, though, like we all know what a penis looks like. I think all of us do. Mm-hmm. It's just it's literally out there. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and then if you ever see your dad naked, you're like, that's what it looks like.
Right.
I just think that there still is so much mystery around what like the other half of the world, like what their parts look like.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, this would be surprising, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I thought I knew a lot about my internal organs.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute, have you been, like, technically sporting a hymen this whole time?
Yeah.
I was thinking of that Jill Soloway thing she wrote, and she might have come up with this or she might have gotten it from somebody, but that idea of, like, men had to put women down because they saw women bleed and not die.
Oh, wow.
And that idea of, like, if they're not magical creatures, then they must be evil witches, you know? Like, how do you explain something that bleeds for 8 days and doesn't die?
It's so crazy.
When you're, like, prehistoric man.
Right. I have no idea how that is, but, like, that's fascinating to think that, like, yeah, that's what it is. It's like they...
Could be that. I mean, I volunteered at my kid's school yesterday, and she's in kindergarten, and... You call two by two, you call the kids out. And I was really surprised at the age of 5 and 6. All the boys, we were just making, you know, with toothpicks and marshmallows, we were making cubes and pyramids and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had to talk them through it. And I would say, so first you're going to, and they'll go, I know, I already know. I already know. And I don't think this was trained in them.
Right.
I think it's a very, and the girls would like listen to me the whole way through and be like, okay, and kind of doubt themselves. And again, I'm not saying this is the worst scientific experiment ever. It's just like, I saw 20 kids
yesterday.
No, it's
an observation. And yeah, exactly.
But yeah,
sure.
But it's like, I am, I think also when you're in a group and things need to be made, decisions need to be made quickly, and a woman is weighing more of the options for possibly a better outcome.
Yes.
And yet a man can say something very loud and quick, and you're just like, well, I guess that's, we're doing that, because he yelled
it. Right, exactly. And I think so much of that is inherent, like it is nature, you know, I mean, that is something that like men have to realize that like, okay, it's in you to always talk first and to always speak up. Maybe you shouldn't.
Right.
Like, it's not that you're bad or like you're not trying to silence women always, but many studies have been done with kids about like, you know, when they have, who has the answer to the question, and it's always boys, they'll raise their hand, or boys will like chime in first. Boys jump in when they know, even when they don't, because they have this thing where they're like, oh, it's that energy. Whereas like a woman is like, I'm going to think about this. And like you said, possibly come up with the better idea than be so impulsive.
Right. I said and, this TED talk. Oh, go ahead. I'm so sorry.
No. It's interesting. And in group dynamics, I've noticed it when I am in a group of, you know, and we in improv shows, when you have six men and two women, sometimes, it's not always, you know, like women have to like, they have to work an extra muscle to go, I have to get myself in there. I have to jump in there. And I think men need to pull back
I think
sometimes.
You must observe that in your classes.
Yes.
Right? Like when you have like the men and the women and you're like, just jump in there.
I think, and I have my sister's voice chiming in because she would be bleeding at this conversation.
Oh,
she would be like, no, it's all learned. It's not inherent. Like,
no, I totally disagree.
I feel like a lot of times when we see behavior, and I don't know, I'm not a sociologist, and I'm...
Yeah, no, of course.
A lot of behavior that we think is innate is what's been rewarded before someone got to us. So it's like, boys are rewarded for speaking up, women aren't. So it's not necessarily that women don't want to speak up, it's that they're not rewarded for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I am the opposite in terms of, like, all I did was speak up. I am the person who's like, yeah, I got it. I don't need, like, don't give me instructions. I'll figure it out. I hate reading instructions. I'm like, and I think a large portion of that probably is the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I grew up in, it's like three girls, one boy. Both my parents were very much like, you know, you have to speak up for yourself and do and fight. And I don't really feel like we were raised separately as boys and girls in that sense. So to me, like, I feel like in an improv show,
neither one of you are ever. But I feel like it's as a general rule, like it's something that it's more like men don't do stuff without realizing that they are, and I totally agree with you, what they get because of how they're rewarded.
Yes.
And it is, and it's also, you know, it's a straight man thing too. And it's, again, they're not aware of it. They're not aware that they, you know, they're sort of, they're not thinking about
their
being
otherness.
A straight white man. They're not thinking about that. They're just doing. And everybody else who's not one of those things has that extra layer of like, you know, and that's neither here nor there, but it's just something that, like, you know, if you get a group of dudes around, they don't include the woman a lot of times, and it's not because they're overtly like, shut up, she doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it's a lot of it is just that they're not conscious of it. They're not aware. Like they have no sense of like that that's how they're being. They would be so, like, you know, shocked and offended to be told otherwise, you know.
Oh, that reminds me of the last time that I felt like we hung out at a party, and I call it the Cahuenga 3. It was at Kyle's house, and because something had come up about, like, it was either like the pussy grabbing or the Bill Cosby, some story of like rape was like out. And pretty overt, and then this, and
like
then,
in the news,
yeah,
but not at this party.
No, not at this party. No, well, no, but
it was
then
unfolding. After.
But yeah. But it was, and it might have been like a college rape or something. And I kind of have been over this last year trying to a bit like dismantle some of the the way that I speak about myself and other women and mm-hmm. take language out that really is just kind of keeping us down or mm-hmm. whatever. But one of the, so I love talking about vulvas and stuff like that. Everyone should know what they look like.
Sure.
If we all know what penises look like. Mm-hmm. And also, I just think it, to me, I think that when people talk about rape and sexual assault, they make it like it's some, ooh, that happened. Oh, that's so scary that it happened to that person. But I was like, no, I was date raped once. And then I was like, I think like so many women are, like mm-hmm. so many women, and you don't realize it. Mm-hmm. And I said at this party, you know, when I've been noticing that when I'm at a place where like more than five people are gathered that are women, and I admit out loud that I was, because mm-hmm. I'm not a victim of it, I didn't do anything wrong, that like one of the other women at least says me too. Mm-hmm. I had been noticing this as a pattern, and literally there was three women and two men that were white male straight comics, and both women had also been raped. So this is like 100% of mm-hmm. the group involved. Mm-hmm. And literally this girl was like, yeah, and then I said, yeah, mine was in college. And then the guy was like, well, where'd you go to college? And I was like, I went.
But see, that's also such a male
like, I went
thing.
To
of
Yale.
Men have to like, they need to explain it in some way. It's like, yeah. like mansplaining is. They were like, well, there's got to be an answer to this.
Oh.
And they're very scientific in that way, but it also comes off kind of blaming in a weird way. Or like, what answer is correct in that
yeah. well,
in
so
that
I
situation?
Said, I said, well, mine was at Yale. Oh. And then the guy was like, well, and started to tell me all about whatever. And I go, well, hold on. I literally do not want to hear what you think about any of this. These two women have just told us they've also been raped.
Right.
And they, now that they've admitted it, I might want to hear their story. Like, mm-hmm. I just want to hear. And he was like, well, blah, 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 blah. And the other woman, I go, well, where did yours happen? She was like, Harvard.
so we know
well,
Ivy
here's
League.
The thing. But, here's the thing about Harvard. No, but it's...
They talked so much, though, that I was like, I can't... So I looked at the women. I'm like, I'm always going to remember this night when this perfect example of
right.
what.
But
we're
isn't that the
about.
Same as the marshmallow building? Whereas it was like the women were like listening and like let's just share and listen, and the men were like, I got this. I'm gonna take
yes.
charge.
And believe me, it wasn't 100% of.
And
the
you're
boys,
talking about
children.
Lovely, and these are also lovely men that would never
yes.
have any idea
no,
that they were being that way.
They were on our side.
Exactly.
They were like our you know, as they say, this is the male advocate, but they were telling me how awful they felt for what had happened. And all, and I was like, oh, yeah. And they were like, well, this is what I think about why men do this. And I was like, hey, I just need to let you guys know, though, that like, again, because we can talk about it like they're news stories or they're awful things that happen somewhere else. But I'm saying to
it
you that
it literally happened to me
and to these two
and these
women.
Two.
And we could go around the party and just collect stories, probably
like in this moment when we're going to follow one of these threads, like if it's like one of those like nine stories, not but where we're going to go along, follow the camera somewhere. Do you really think I want the dude's point of view on why he thinks, like, if you
yeah.
were a rapist,
if
I might
gonna
be
make
interested.
A move. Right.
But like, if we're going to move to a new like person.
Yeah.
If we want to hear who's going to talk next, I definitely want to hear this woman's like past trauma over like your opinion about how she might feel about
but
it.
But do you ever notice that? I notice it as a white person.
White.
That
white.
When racism comes up and people start talking about race and the minority or the several minorities in the room will talk about it and myself included will start like chiming in and I'm right. like, Colleen, white people have had a lot of time to talk about race. You don't know. If someone asks you for your opinion, give your opinion, but let's hear the other people in the room who mm-hmm. actually are minorities talk about this.
Yeah. Right.
As opposed to you going like, but I've thought about it and I'm not one of those, because that's what it is. As you,
it comes from a place of it's total guilt, and it's also like, I want to let everybody in the room know that I'm woke and that I get it.
Yeah.
And it's like, it comes from a good place, but it's also like, it's always interesting to me when, you know, when conversations about race come up and people of color are actually quiet about it, because you can tell they're kind of like, let's hear what the white people have to say about it this time, you know, and they live their whole lives with it and understanding it. And we it's like a conversation piece for us. It's just like a thing where you're like, these three women have experienced rape. Right. Whereas for these men, it's something to talk about.
Well, versus, one is an experience and one's an opinion.
Exactly. And, like, I think
an informed opinion.
And I think we are out of time.
On
sadly,
rape is where we ended it.
I think what we've learned today
vulva
is like,
full of rape.
Don't tell people that you know how they feel. You know, because you don't. It's like whether they've lost a family member or a pet, or they've gone through some horrible trauma.
Like mime school.
Mime
school.
The worst story of it all is that mime man, that horrible, evil, drunk, smoking mime, Debbie Allen stomper. Anyway, I think that's such a good thing to keep in mind, and I will try to do the same. And I think it's always good to just to say, I'm sorry. I love you. I'm thinking about you.
I love you, Drew.
Period.
I love you, Drew. I'm such a fan of this.
I love
podcast.
You both.
I love
this
you.
Is so fun. I love you both. Thank you for coming and doing this. And
thank you for
being on this,
us.
Being on the show and having
we're
a Friday
touching.
With
we're
me.
Touching.
We're touching. I want to thank my guests, Colleen Smith and Stephanie Escajeda. This has been another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. Have a week.
Oh, have a week.